Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, we're moving on with our beginner's guide to some of the best music stars of all time. Now, we've already covered a fair bit of ground. We've revisited hits and less explored corners of the careers of Elton John, Miley Cyrus, U2, Shania Twain and Blur, to name just a few. And the idea is we take a band or a singer that you think you know, but show you why you need to take a deeper dive into their back catalogue. Last time we talked about Blur. Next up, it's Queen Bee. Great excitement here in the studio for my guest Sive Downes from Lyric FM and RTE culture writer. You are a big fan.
I am a fan. I love her. What's not to love, Claire?
Where did this start for you?
Okay, so basically when I was six, I had two CDs. My first two CDs, you know, you listen to your parents' music, but to have your own in your little room. So one of them was Hannah Montana, the album. Classic. The other one was Beyoncé B-Day, which was her second studio album. So I played those albums on repeat. So I knew all the lyrics. So it's funny in retrospect, thinking back to me singing the lyrics of Irreplaceable. To the left, like kicking a man to the curb, 7 years, 6 years old. Hadn't a clue what I was talking
about.
Loved it. I felt it. It was my truth.
So let's hear some of what you were singing along to in your bedroom at the age of seven. This is Irreplaceable. Like Going Home for You, Sive, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. Memories.
That's 2006. So that was her second album,
yes,
B-Day.
Yes, that was her second studio album, yeah.
Now she's one of the biggest, if not the biggest star in the world.
She is, yeah, yeah.
Can you explain how that happened?
How it happened. Maybe when we talk about like why it happened, why she is so huge.
Yeah.
So I think primarily two reasons. The main reason I would say is her ability to constantly reinvent herself. She's like a cultural shapeshifter, and because she's such an enigma, she's an elusive personality. We can't access her.
She doesn't talk. Does she?
Doesn't
very
talk.
Little.
Very little. Very little. So I think that gives her the ability to completely reinvent herself all the time. And that's what the fans are so invested in, mm-hmm. is this unpredictability. And I think the second reason is because she is a grafter. She is such a hard worker. She's like a musical athlete. You know, we know that from a very young age, she was kind of primed or trained, as sad and kind of as happy we are to have her, as sad as that kind of sounds, to be who she is today.
So talk about that, about how that started and how she was primed from the beginning to be a huge star.
Yeah, so basically Beyoncé started off, it's 'cause she kind of had an organic start. So she was put into dance class by her parents at the age of seven. And she had a dance teacher called Darlette Johnson, who was sweeping, you know, cleaning up after class, and she was singing. And Beyoncé just finished the end of the phrase at like a high octave, which most seven-year-olds cannot do. So she was like, oh, sing that again, amazed by this kid. And it kind of started from there. So she recognised this talent that she had, and her parents then put her into singing competitions, and it kind of went off from there. So the first girl group she was in was called Girl Time, and that was with six other members, one including Kelly Rowland. And that was when she was only 9 years old.
Wow.
9 years old. And that's how, you know, you think about the, you know, this the vision of Beyoncé running on a treadmill, singing ballads. That actually started when she was nine. So her dad, Matthew Knowles, used to make them run and sing. So they were trained in this way, or, you know, put them in different spots facing the wall, doing choreography to the beat, you know, so they were so in sync. So she was, like I said, primed from such an early age to be who she is.
So when did she go from that first band then to Destiny's Child?
Yeah, so Destiny's Child was put together in 1990. So as we know, the Destiny's Child that started wasn't the Destiny's Child that we ended up with. There was a lot of turmoil, a lot of legal problems. Some of the original members, the reason they left is because they felt there was favouritism, because of course Matthew Knowles was the manager of Beyoncé's father. Yeah, and I think it's quite clear that he always saw her, the bands that she was in, as centred around Beyoncé. You know, she was the front runner of these bands.
Well, let's take a listen now to Destiny's Child. This is 1996. So this is 6 years on from when they first started. This is when her ascent to fame really began. Let's take a listen. Can you handle this? Their due size, they were huge.
They were huge. And I think what was so great about them is, you know, they kept their southern drawls, you know. They were a young girl group, you know, kind of taking on the world, and people loved that about them, you know. So even though there's rumors, you know, that they didn't get on, or, you know, people say, oh, I'm the Beyoncé of the group, of this friendship group, I'm the Beyoncé. I know I'm guilty of saying that myself. But we do see them reunite from time to time. Like, we did see when Beyoncé did Coachella 2018, they came together and they did it like a gorgeous Destiny's Child melody. So it's nice to see that they seem to be friends still, Michelle Kelly.
But from the moment they made it really big back in 1996, from when we heard that song, they lasted about 4 years before everybody said, right, I'm heading off into my own little... world, my own, taking my own direction here.
Yes, and interestingly, actually, Matthew Knowles has said that this was a strategic business move. So his plan was, you know, Kelly, you focus on the pop, Beyoncé, you focus on the R&B, Michelle, you focus on the gospel, and then get as big as you possibly can, build a brand. And I think what we need to remember is Matthew Knowles, yes, he was Beyoncé's father, but he was a businessman first. Mm-hmm. He talks about branding. He doesn't really talk about the musicality of the group.
But he wasn't a performer or a manager in that context before Beyoncé was running on the treadmill and singing at the age of 9. He had nothing to do with the business.
No, he worked in medicinal sales.
There you go.
Yes, medicinal sales.
But he obviously saw the potential and he went out and this became his career, because he left his own job, didn't he? To manage Beyoncé.
He did. Beyoncé. He left his own job. And he got her, you know, 7-figure deals with L'Oreal, with Pepsi. So she was really doing everything. She was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Her first album then that she released as a solo artist, that was a series of collaborations, wasn't it?
It was. So her first album was Dangerously in Love. And we actually have the 20th anniversary of it this month. So this album was kind of the bridge between Beyoncé being this kind of, you know, late teens girl in a girl group to kind of becoming an adult and discovering her womanhood and navigating that womanhood. So Dangerously in Love, it's kind of a chronological timeline of a relationship. So, as we all know, Jay-Z features on this album with the hit song Crazy in Love. And it's kind of like, it's nice probably to look back to see that was the start of their relationship.
Okay,
you know?
And more about that a little bit later on. But then in 2008, she took us all by surprise because her next album was I Am Sasha Fierce. So we're all going, well, where's Beyoncé gone? Let's take a listen. Acting up, drinking my cup up, I can care less what you think. I need no permission, did I mention, don't pay him any attention. Cause you had your turn, and now you're gonna learn what it really feels like to miss me. Cause if you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. If you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. Don't be mad at what you see, that's me on it. If you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. I can't believe that's from 2008, because my children will sit in the backseat of the car and sing that song now, and they absolutely love it. But what was Sasha Fierce all about?
Sasha Fierce was about unapologetically being a diva. And what's wrong with that? You know, men can beat divas all the time. Nobody says anything to them. And I think this is what this album was all about. And it started a global dance craze. You know, everybody was doing the... So, and this album is a record. It picked up the most amount of Grammys in one night ever. Mm-hmm. Ever. 6 Grammys. And also that iconic, I don't know if you call it iconic, that moment where at the MTV Music Awards where Kanye West takes the award off Taylor Swift and says, Beyonce had the album of the year, because he was so, everyone was so obsessed with Beyonce. That was that same mm-hmm. year.
And interesting that both women have these fans who are so unbelievably loyal that that caused a lot of upset. And that's created two camps, hasn't it? The
exactly.
Swifties and the, what do you call the Beyonce fans?
The Beehive.
Yes. And Never the Twain Will Meet. Now, 2011 then, we move on to, because that's when she said goodbye to her dad.
Yes.
As her manager.
Yes.
Do we know why?
Well, there's a few rumours why. They dissolved the business relationship in 2011. People say there's allegations that he was embezzling funds from her tours. And there's also allegations that he had a love child when he was in a relationship with her mother. They are no longer together. And when he got remarried in 2013, Beyonce and her sister Solange didn't go to the wedding. But we never really get anything concrete from Beyonce, do we? We always just kind of get elusive. So in her 2016 album Lemonade, there's a track called Daddy's Lessons, on which she does kind of talk about men hurting her, men close to her. So that's the only real concrete bit of evidence that we kind of do have.
She speaks through her music.
She does.
Now, after the 2011 split with the dad, she released her next album, which was called 4. Let's take a listen to a track from that. Who run the world? Girls, girls. 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 Who run this mother? 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 I'm going to deviate for a minute and talk about seeing her live in Dublin. I know this tour, she didn't come to Dublin. A lot of people upset about that. But the last time she was here, I saw her. And I can't get that image out of my mind that you described to us of her dancing against the wall and having to run at the age of 9 and sing at the same time. The performance is so physical, isn't it? She doesn't stop moving the whole way through.
She's an athlete. She really is. And I think that's the thing. You know, you get a lot of eye rolls. And I love Beyonce. But she is an utter professional. She is so dedicated to her craft, and you have to respect that whether you're a fan of her music or not. Her shows are something else. They really, really are.
So where do you think her direction is now? How would you characterise her at the moment, Si?
Yeah, that's a funny one. I think in the latter half of her career so far, she's become more her music has become more politically driven. Mm-hmm. So I think she has the time now to, you know, take years off and really think about what she's going to produce. So with Lemonade, that was, you know, an ode to the Deep South and racial trauma and her roots. And Renaissance was an ode to her queer culture and gay dance culture and her Uncle Johnny. So next, I'm not sure exactly what's next, but that's the thing that I love so much about Beyonce. You never know what's going to come.
It's the reinvention. We might have time to take a final clip. This is, you mentioned Lemonade. She recorded this song, Freedom, with Kendrick Lamar. It ended up becoming an anthem for the 2020 protests against George Floyd's death. Let's take a listen. Sive, thank you so much for coming in. Sive Downs from RTÉ Lyric FM and RTÉ culture writer and Beyonce super fan. Thank you very much. Now, a quick statement from SEAI, because we were talking about grants, retrofitting grants and older buildings a little earlier. Well, the SEAI were in touch to say they are finalising guidance on improving energy efficiency in traditional buildings. Also, these old homes are not fully excluded from grant schemes. They can still get things like roof insulation, heating control, and solar grants. That's from the SEAI, but it sounds like we're going to hear new guidance on that in the coming months. And that's it for today. Thank you for listening. You can catch up on anything you might have missed on the RTÉ Radio app. The programme was produced by Rachel Graham, research by Kieran Dunn. Our broadcast coordinator is Louise Kerr-Ross, and Kieran Cullen was on sound. It's over now to Louise.